I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Today, we know that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction and had not been plotting with al-Qaeda against the United States, reasons the Bush administration gave for going to war in 2003. Here's President Bush, Secretary of State Colin Powell, and Vice President Dick Cheney making the case for war.
Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraqi regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
Indeed, the facts and Iraq's behavior show that Saddam Hussein and his regime are concealing their efforts to produce more weapons of mass destruction.
We do know with absolute certainty that he is using his procurement system to acquire the equipment he needs in order to enrich uranium to build a nuclear weapon.
Our guest Joe Huffle was a congressman from Pennsylvania's 13th district at the time and voted to authorize the war with Iraq, something he regrets to this day. His book, The Iraq Lie, is about how the administration misled Congress and the public, manipulated intelligence reports, and how many of the architects of the war have not taken responsibility for their actions. Joe Huffle was a Pennsylvania state representative and served three terms as a Montgomery County commissioner just outside of Philadelphia. And he joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. And Joe Huffle, it's been a number of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Great to be back.
Nice to have you back. Is this your mea culpa?
It is. I'm frustrated that I got this decision wrong. I must have cast 10,000 votes in my career as a congressman and a state rep and a county commissioner. This is the only one I want back. This is the worst mistake. I believe we had it to disarm Saddam Hussein of weapons of mass destruction, and it turns out he didn't have any.
Your book begins, actually, this is October 2002, and you and a number of members of Congress, bipartisan group of members of Congress, are invited to the White House. Why were you included in that contingent?
Well, I think they were briefing the members of the then House International Relations Committee, now called Foreign Affairs. And it was a bipartisan group. We were ushered into the Roosevelt Room of the White House, very impressive location. And our briefers were George Tenet, the director of the CIA, and Condoleezza Rice, national security advisor at that time. And it turns out they both lied to our faces.
What did they tell you?
Well, they told us that it was an absolute certainty that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that he was getting more weapons, and he was perfectly willing to use them at any moment. And the lie comes because that's not what the classified intelligence was telling them. The classified intelligence was saying, well, we think Hussein may have weapons of mass destruction, but we're not so sure. The classified documents were full of caveats, reservations, uncertainty, and none of that uncertainty was passed on to the Congress or the public.
And at the time, and maybe even today, but at the time, were members of Congress allowed access? Were you allowed to read those national intelligence documents?
No. Only the leaders of Congress and the members of the intelligence committees in the House and Senate had access at that point to national intelligence estimates, NIEs, and they were forbidden by law to tell anybody what they read.
Including their fellow members of Congress?
Correct. I remember Nancy Pelosi, who was then the number two Democratic leader, saying in caucus she was comfortable voting against the war. She couldn't tell us what she had seen, but she said the intelligence doesn't match the threat. But Dick Gephardt, the leader of the Democrats, was voting yes. So there was quite a split.
At one point during this meeting at the White House, someone asked George Tenet about, you know, just how certain are you about weapons of mass destruction, and on a scale of 1 to 10, and he said 10.
10. He said 10.
Meaning 100% certain.
Right, which is about as certain as you can get. So I felt that the I was uncertain about the vote as the vote on October 10th, 2002 approached.
About a week later, right?
Exactly. But I did feel that we had to disarm Saddam Hussein, that we just couldn't take a chance. And I thought that, had the Allies moved sooner against Hitler in the 30s, maybe World War II could have been avoided. Hussein had weapons in the past. He'd used them in the past. So he clearly was a murderous tyrant. There's no question about that. But But I was convinced that he had those weapons.
Although, as you write, it was sort of a 60-40 proposition. Now, you weren't 100% convinced, but you were clearly leaning in the direction of the vote.
That's correct. We had not seen the rank-and-file members of Congress, had not seen classified information. We had these briefings that were considered private, but we just heard in those briefings exactly what the administration was saying that evening on the evening news. So we knew we weren't seeing anything truly classified. But my wife objected greatly, as my daughter did, to my pending vote yes. And she told me, you just can't trust George Bush. And I said to her, well, if he's lying about these weapons, it's going to ruin them. And it turns out we were both right.
And was she, just because she was a Democrat and she didn't trust the Bush, I mean, was that a sort of a partisan view on her part, or had she looked at something different than you had looked at?
No, she hadn't seen anything different, but it really wasn't partisan. She just had a sense, you can't trust this man. And as usual, her sense was correct.
So a week later, you did vote. But it sounds, and you include some of your speech that you gave in Congress. But you seem to have some concerns about sort of what would happen after an invasion.
Exactly. And I expressed those early on, that we had to Iraqitize the situation, meaning we had to get the Iraqis back in charge. We couldn't become occupiers. We needed to work through the United Nations. If we needed security there, we could turn to the United Nations. We couldn't just buy the whole problem ourselves. There was a coalition with the British, the Australians, and some Polish soldiers, but it was a pretty meager coalition, nothing that like George Herbert Walker Bush had put together for the Persian Gulf War. And it just was clear even early on that we didn't have the UN with us. There was a lot of international objections to what we were doing, and I was worried from the get-go that we were going to get stuck as occupiers, and that's what happened.
Mm. How convinced were you, and I know a number of people were, or people that were on the fence or had some questions or doubts, when Colin Powell went to the United Nations and he held up that vial of, I'm not sure what was in it, but nonetheless, it made a very passionate defense for going into war.
He sure did. February 5th, 2003, it was compelling. It was powerful. That's what I thought at the time. This guy is really hammering his points home. Colin Powell was wrong. He admits it now. He calls that a blot on his record. But I tell you, he was the best person in the Bush White House. Colin Powell was amazing. He would come before our committee as Secretary of State. All his staff he would put behind him. He'd sit at the table alone, no documents, nothing to support him. He'd answer every question on his annual visit to the committee. The backbenchers, which was where I was, we tried to stump him. We'd sit together and try to come up with some obscure foreign policy question to see if we could stump him when we got our 2 minutes to ask questions. We never could. He was amazing. But he was wrong about Iraq, and it is to this day astonishing to me because of his smarts. His State Department Intelligence Bureau was very skeptical about this war, and somehow Powell just missed it.
And there's still, I mean, we're talking about something that happened, you know, a dozen years ago, essentially. But there's still some leftover questions, which is, and I've always wondered, for the people that wrote the National Intelligence Estimate with those caveats, with those cautions, why didn't they speak up? I mean, there were so many speeches that were given by members of the Bush administration talking about mushroom clouds, that would be Condi Rice, and others with this, you know, very gloom and doom. If we do not invade, this is going to happen to the United States. Why wasn't there some pushback?
It's a sad moment in the history of our intelligence operations. They should have spoken up. I'm sure they were convinced they'd be fired the next morning, and they probably would have been by this White House. Any CIA employee would have been fired by George Tenet, who became a promoter of the president's policies rather than a defender of the intelligence. The only one who spoke up did so in 2003, Greg Thielman of the State Department, but he had retired at the time. And I credit him with speaking up publicly. It would have been better if it had happened before the vote, but it would have cost him his job, I'm sure. So you would like to think that our intelligence professionals would have enough regard for their work product that they'd speak up against the politicians. But unfortunately, the politicians can abuse their authority, and these guys feared for their jobs.
Well, you mentioned the CIA white paper, and this basically, I mean, sort of really whitewashed a number of issues and excluded actual doubts about whether Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Nonetheless, it gets published.
Exactly. The National Intelligence Estimate of October 1st had all those caveats and reservations. It had four agency dissents from some part of the document, but that was the classified Bible of intelligence on Iraq. And 4 days later, because the press and Congress was clamoring for a declassified document, George Tenet and the CIA put out the white paper on October 4th. And that took out all of the reservations, never mentioned those four agencies, and presented a totally positive, certain statement that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. That's really the lie. And a comparison of the National Intelligence Estimate and the white paper that came out 4 days later makes it very clear how the Bush administration manipulated the intelligence.
So why did they want to go to war with Iraq?
That is a great question. I'm not smart enough to analyze George Bush. I think he felt he could bring democracy to the Middle East. That would be his legacy, which would be a wonderful thing if it could be done. And he had delusions of grandeur. I don't think he was a curious man. I don't know whether he ever read the documents, the intelligence reports that were submitted to him. I'm certain that Cheney read them, that Condoleezza Rice read them, Don Rumsfeld, George Tenet produced them. I don't know what the president knew, but I know that he didn't show enough skepticism. He just became an advocate of a policy that was founded on a lie.
We're almost up on a break here. I mean, at what point did you say to yourself, I made the wrong vote? I voted wrong.
By the winter of 2003, before we went to war, when the UN inspectors in January, February, and March were coming back and saying, we're not finding weapons. We're getting access. We're having no notice inspections, and we're not finding weapons. At that point, a great president would have said, wait a minute. Let's hold off this invasion, because I've based my whole invasion on weapons of mass destruction. We're not finding them. And, of course, Bush just ignored that and just pushed forward, and we went to war March 19th. When those reports are coming out, I realize we got a real problem here.
I want to pick up on that quickly, a short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Joe Huffel is our guest today on Radio Times. He served in Congress from 1999 to 2005. He voted for the Iraq War, a vote he now regrets, and he's written a book called The Iraq Lie, How the White House Sold the War, reliving some of this history here, but the history certainly has some impact on what's going on in the Middle East today, including in Iraq. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Stay with us.
The National Museum of American Jewish History at 5th and Market supports WHYY and presents Chasing Dreams, Baseball, and Becoming American, the first large-scale family-friendly exhibition to focus on the role baseball has played in the lives of immigrant and minority communities as they sought to understand or challenge American culture and ideals. From Hank Greenberg to Jackie Robinson, Chasing Dreams highlights the stories of baseball's barrier breakers and change makers on view through October 26th. NMAJH.org or 215-923-3811.
Hi, I'm Stephen Quinn. It's the Best of Q, and we'll hear a special feature conversation with hip-hop superstar, Toronto booster, actor, impresario, and Grammy winner, Drake. Gian Gomeshi with Drake coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Former President Nixon taped thousands of hours of conversations when he was in the White House. Now they've been transcribed in a new book.
Scholars could actually be a fly on the wall and watch, if you like, the sausage factory of how policy is being made, and in Nixon's case, particularly foreign policy.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Joe Huffel. Back in October 2002, he was a congressman from Pennsylvania and part of a congressional delegation that went to the White House sent to attend a briefing on why the U.S. should go to war with Iraq. He eventually voted to give President Bush the authority to go to war, a decision he now regrets. And it's what he writes about in his new book called The Iraq Lie, Why the White House Sold the War. And you can give us a call to join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. In fact, we have an email from Tim saying, how is it that we civilians knew that they were lying? Did political aspirations have any influence on your vote? That's to you, Joe Huffel.
Well, it's a great point, and Tim thinks he knew because he exercised his own opinion, but you know, all of the official statements were Hussein's armed and dangerous. I think that the frustration is that that level of deception carried the day in Washington, and I wasn't certain about my vote. I was 60% in favor of it, but felt that I had to protect the country by disarming Hussein. It leads me to my main recommendation, which is we need to change our intelligence laws so if a president ever again asks us to enter a preemptive war, that the intelligence judgments on which he or she is basing the call for war, those judgments must be made public. So everybody, press, public, and Congress can see them.
But as you said, the official story was that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and had been, I guess, plotting with al-Qaeda. But there were unofficial reports. And there were investigative journalists who were looking at some of these issues, pushing back on some of the official story.
I think the American media did a poor job, not a good job, in evaluating that whole march to war. Certainly the mainstream media beat the war drums as much as George Bush.
Are we talking the New York Times? And
all of them. Yeah, and Judy Miller of the New York Times was, you know, her credibility was wrecked because of her collaborations and ethical misjudgments about you know, trying to get to the bottom of that story.
You mentioned the fact that, and this was early, I guess, early 2003, before the war began, UN inspectors went to Iraq. They said, you know, they couldn't find any evidence. There might have been some kind of a program, but no actual evidence of weapons of mass destruction. Hans Blix, a name from that time, the International Atomic Energy Agency went. David Kaye resigns as well. So there was a lot of pushback coming from inspectors.
Well, yes, after the vote, which was in the fall of 2002, in the early months of 2003, the inspectors were making public reports three different times to the UN, and Hans Blix, the weapons inspector, and Mohammed El-Baradei, the nuclear inspector, were saying we're not finding weapons. And that's when the president should have put a hold on things, in my judgment. He should have said, you know, I've based my entire pitch here on the fact that Hussein's got weapons of mass destruction. The experts in the field, in country, aren't finding them. Now, it would have been hard. You know, the troops are on the border or on shipboard and things were moving forward. But a great president would have acted. And George Bush was not a great president.
But also, you've got Saddam Hussein. We learned this after the fact, is that he wanted his neighbors to think that he had some kind of weapons of mass destruction because he feared them. And this was part of his propaganda as well.
True. But Hussein allowed the weapons inspectors back in the country in November of 2002 after the congressional vote that authorized war, gave the president authority to go into Iraq. Hussein, who had thrown the inspectors out in 1998, let them back in. So he, frankly, was willing to demonstrate, he wouldn't admit it, but he was willing to have the inspectors look around and not find anything. And that's what they were publicly reporting.
You say in this book that if members of Congress had seen the raw or actual intelligence, not the edited versions, that there would not have been enough votes to authorize the war in Iraq.
I feel that very strongly. The intelligence was so full of uncertainty and reservations that I know certainly I would have voted no, and I think a majority would have said, this guy may be dangerous, but let's let these inspections show what is the truth in Iraq. Let's keep the sanctions in place. You know, it turns out that Hussein was disarmed sometime in the mid-1990s. It had been years since he had any weapons. Now, he'd had them in the past, used them against his own civilians. I mean, the guy was bad news. But he didn't have them after the mid-1990s. And, enhanced inspections would have been the thing to do.
As you mentioned earlier, you really think that members of Congress, maybe not the public, but members of Congress should have access to the sort of basic raw intelligence before voting on a war or not. Is there kind of a mistrust between the executive branch and Congress so that they try to limit and control, maybe no matter who's in office, try to limit and control who has access?
Historically, yes. And Dick Cheney famously said in 2002, well, we can't give members of Congress classified information. They'll leak it tomorrow morning. And in some cases,
I was gonna say,
it's
there's
true.
Some truth to
yes,
that.
There is some truth. Now, the Obama administration has been more open. When the president was pushing for possible action against Syria and their use of chemical weapons, he provided to members of Congress all of the classified documentation. He urged them all to read it. Now, that's great, but that's not a statutory guarantee. That's the policy of one administration. And I don't think, in a case of a call for preemptive war, that only Congress should see the intelligence. I think the public ought to see the intelligence and the press. You would protect your sources of information and your methods of collection, always, but the summaries on which an administration saying we need to go to war, the summaries of the intelligence, well, those are opinions. And if you protect your sources and methods, you don't risk a thing by disclosing those opinions, and you let the entire country make a decision of whether or not to launch a preemptive war.
Why did you write this book?
I was frustrated. I wanted to set the record straight. When I read the memoirs, actually, when I read the reviews of the memoirs in 07, 08, 2010, I got so frustrated. The attitude of the president and all of his administration was, the intelligence was wrong. Who knew? Well, they knew.
Mm.
They were the ones that had distorted it and manipulated it. And as part of my research, I read the memoirs. I got even madder. And so that convinced me that I needed to get this off my chest. And I wanted to make the point that we need to disclose intelligence in the future if we're ever going to have a preemptive war.
And we're talking about the memoirs of George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice, and George Tenet.
Correct, those six.
And you say, as a body of work, these books must be the sorriest collection of apology-free, self-serving, fact-avoiding, finger-pointing memoirs in the history of the genre.
I wanted to go further, but I thought that was...
Really?
Yeah, I should limit myself.
And you include Colin Powell in that?
No. In fact, I think Powell has admitted his error. He hasn't written a full memoir about it, but he said it's a blot on my record and something that he can't correct. Yeah. He's very frustrated. And George Tenet, who really was the worst abuser at the time, becoming a promoter of a presidential policy rather than just presenting intelligence. His memoir is very candid and very honest, and I think will be of value to historians who want to look back and see how this happened. And he admits that white paper he put out was a major error, that it presented the case in far too assertive terms, his phrase. And he's very honest. But Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice, they're still trying to con us. They misquote reports. They talk about those UN reports in January, February, March, and misquote them in ways as if those inspectors are backing up the president's point, when in fact they're shredding the president's credibility because they weren't finding weapons. It's Bush hardly talks about the dispute. never mentions the white paper's existence. So very frustrating.
And from your perspective, it's the CIA white paper that's the kind of smoking gun.
Yeah.
I hate to use that metaphor, but
that proves the lie.
Because it was clear that sections, I mean, whole words, sections were taken out, including doubts and questions and caveats and cautions, all of that.
Exactly. That was all taken out in the white paper by George Tenet. And that white paper was supposed to be the summary of the classified intelligence. And when they summarized it, they distorted it.
And that's Joe Huffel, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. As a member of Congress, he voted to authorize the war in Iraq, a vote he regrets in part because he believes it was based on a series of lies. His book is called The Iraq Lie, and it's subtitled How the White House Sold the War, and it includes quotes and comments from the president, the vice president, Secretary of State Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and others calling for war with Iraq. And then he sort of A-Bs that against some of the intelligence that raises a whole host of questions about their comments. I do want to get to some callers. We've got Mike. Please discuss the proposition that Cheney, Rumsfeld et al. Were orchestrating this as a grudge for George Herbert Walker Bush not taking out Saddam in the first war. And that's a theory that's been around for a while. I don't know if you have to be a psychiatrist to answer that, but I'd be curious about your thoughts.
I cannot answer that. I really don't know what motivated President Bush. It might have been that. It might have been a desire to get the oil. It could have been a lot of things. I kind of think it was he wanted to be the spreader of democracy. But I'm not competent to analyze that motivation.
Let me get, looks like Damian from Trooper to join us on Radio Times. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to start with a quote that I've kind of crafted from other people's quotes, that war makes rich men richer and poor men dead.
Oh.
And I think that the neocons started this whole thing to earn money. They gave a non-bid contract to Cheney's ex-company. They weren't interested in oil down the line. They were making money immediately on the non-bid contract. I think Bush was a pawn because they thought he was electable because of the religious thing that he was pushing back in Texas. And I don't think he was in charge. I think the whole thing was to make money for the rich people.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Can we boil it down to money, do you think, Joe Huffel?
Not quite that easy, although no question the Halliburton Corporation did get no-bid contracts and made a fortune throughout our whole occupation. Of course, Dick Cheney said we're going to be viewed as liberators, not occupiers. So I don't know that – I don't think the Bush administration planned for an 11-year occupation. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were telling us we'll be in and out in a few months, and I think they believed it.
Damien, thanks for the call to Radio Times. An email from Frizzell. Why didn't you, this is you, Joe Huffel, request more direct proof? War is a pretty serious thing to authorize.
Yeah, great question. I wish I had. That's part of my regret. We were hearing privately the same thing that the Bush folks were saying publicly, you know, that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, was getting more, was willing to use them. I thought that the white paper was legitimate and was a summary of the classified intelligence that at that point I was not allowed to see as a rank and file member. It did not occur to me that the distortions and the lies were such as they were.
If you could talk to Cheney, what would you say?
Oh, man. He did such a disservice. He was wrong about so many things. He lied to us about the weapons. He said we'd be greeted as liberators, but we were occupiers. He wanted to marginalize the Sunni minority, which is continuing to hurt us to this day. He disbanded the Iraqi army, which has made them ineffective against ISIS and the current uprising. He threw all the Ba'athist bureaucrats out of government. There was nobody left who could run the trains on time. Cheney was wrong about everything, and recently he's been trying to blame Obama and Malachi. Well, Cheney and Bush handpicked Prime Minister Malachi in May of 06, put him in office 30 months before President Obama took office. So All the current problems there are due to the bad policies of Bush and Cheney that came through our occupation. Congress had a little input. I was objecting to all those things, but this was after the vote. I was objecting to how the occupation was rolling out, but it was too late. I had voted for war, and we were there.
Vice President Dick Cheney said recently that it, and still standing by, it was the absolute right thing to do, the invasion of Iraq.
And he's absolutely wrong.
Do you, when you look at what's happening in Iraq today, I mean, there's so much going on in the Middle East, so much of it is so disturbing and heartbreaking and worrisome, frankly. When you look at Iraq today, what do you see?
Well, it's a mess. Malachi has caused a lot of problems by being small-minded and punitive. He only supports the Shiite majority from which he comes. He's been punitive toward the Kurds and punitive to the Sunni Muslims, and that's created all this dissension and unrest and sectarian violence. They disbanded the army. The army's a shell of its former self, so when the jihadists jump up and announce the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq, the army can't stop them. They almost got into Baghdad, and now ISIS has turned the other way over the weekend, and they're going up into Kurdistan. So it's very difficult there. I think in the short run, what we need is a new prime minister who certainly will come from the Shiite majority, who must be tolerant, who must reach out to the Sunnis, reach out to the Kurds, give everybody power, share power, which Malachi hasn't done, and try to get people pulling together. Long term, I don't know if Iraq can survive. But if we don't get a government in there that's willing to share power, it won't last more than a couple months.
Do you think, though, that the Iraq war has made the United States look weak and even prevented this president, Obama, from, I'm not saying sending troops to war, but to sort of think militarily about some of these issues?
Yeah, I think our foreign policy was badly damaged by the Iraq war and the occupation, the failed occupation that came after the invasion. And, of course, the military performed brilliantly. They always do. They do what we ask them to do. It's the aftermath, the occupation of countries that always turns out badly for us. I just think we need to understand the mistakes, try to prevent preemptive war from happening again without the country fully behind it. And I do think President Obama has been too much hands-off in Iraq. I think he's ignored Maliki and allowed the prime minister to be punitive and cause a lot of problems. I can't blame President Obama for that, but I think he should have been paying some more attention.
And that's Joe Huffel, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. Again, he was a member of Congress when he voted to authorize the war in Iraq. As I said several times, a vote he regrets to this day. One of the reasons why he wrote this book called The Iraq Lie, How the White House Sold the War. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more.
This morning when you came in my room, I was practically naked and you didn't look at my body once.
On the Showtime series Masters of Sex, actress Allison Janney's character is married to a closeted man. She's nominated for an Emmy for that role and another for her performance in the CBS sitcom Mom. She joins us on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Feedback. For how and what we're doing is everywhere. It can be direct, indirect, it can be verbal or nonverbal. We know it can come not only from the outside world, but also inside ourselves. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll speak with Harvard professor Sheila Heen about how we can use feedback we find everywhere to improve our lives. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we know that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, had not been plotting with al-Qaeda against the United States. These, of course, were reasons the Bush administration gave for going to war in 2003. Our guest, Joe Huffel, was a congressman from Pennsylvania's 13th District at the time. He voted to authorize the war with Iraq. His book, called The Iraq Lie, is about how the administration misled Congress and the public, manipulated intelligence reports, and how the architects of that war, many of them, have not taken responsibility for their actions. And we have an explosion of phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. It is interesting, President Obama, an opponent, a critic of the Iraq war, but he has made it very clear that he is moving forward and doesn't want to necessarily relitigate that war. Do you think that's a mistake on his part?
It is a mistake. We have to learn from our mistakes. We need to have accountability. I don't know whether South African-style Truth and Justice Commission is needed, but we can't keep making the same mistakes, which is why I believe we need to change our intelligence laws, for example. And I don't think President Obama should re-engage in major combat operations in Iraq without another vote from Congress authorizing it. And that should be preceded by disclosure of the intelligence. That would indicate that's in our national interest. So we've got to pay attention. We can't just ignore the mistakes we've made.
There was the 9/11 Commission and its report. The Senate Intelligence Committee had findings. I mean, there have been a number of investigations essentially coming to the same conclusion you did. So it's not as if people can pretend like they don't know what happened. But you're saying you want something more than that.
Well, the Senate Intelligence Committee did a fabulous job. Three major reports in 04, 06, and 08. All finding that the intelligence was misused, that the president misled us into war under false pretenses, and so on and so forth. But the public didn't pay too much attention to all of that. The 04 election was astonishing. By election day, Iraq had turned bad. The Iraq Survey Group had said there are no weapons and there were no weapons. That came out in September of 04. The Senate had said, the Intelligence Committee had said, you know, the intelligence was misused and so forth. But the election of 04 was more about John Kerry's performance in Vietnam than it was about George Bush's performance in Iraq. You got to give the Bush political team credit. And I think that the country didn't want to relitigate then, and soldiers were in the field and in harm's way, and so it's difficult for Congress to switch gears when they have to support the troops. But at this point, it's been a long time, but there are lessons to be learned, and that's why we need to look at this very seriously now.
You talk about the importance of having access to intelligence, and I scribbled down the word Snowden. I'd be curious about how you see him. It doesn't necessarily have to do with the Iraq war, but here's someone who worked for the NSA. He was a contractor and saw things he didn't like and decided to go public about, you know, I guess the government not watching, but having access to our sensitive personal material.
Well, I think he's a hero and a goat. I think it was good that he disclosed. He followed his conscience, and the revelations have been important, and laws are being changed as a result. But he should have stayed in this country. He should have fought for justice within our system. I think he would have received it, maybe not at first, but I think he would have become a national hero. But going to Russia and seeking asylum, a very bad move on his part.
Let me get, looks like Stephen from New Jersey to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good.
Yeah, I'm calling in regards to, is there any, like, legal action that the American people can take in regards to the lies and the deaths and the money wasted?
Any legal?
Treasure, as they say.
Yeah, legal action.
Great question. I don't think so, other than how you vote at the polls. I mean, these were national policies. Congress authorized the war. It was a mistake, but Congress authorized it. The Bush administration carried out the occupation that was full of bad policy. And the remedy is at the ballot box, and that's why I just said I was frustrated that the 2004 election didn't turn on Iraq and its errors at all. But
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it truly is.
It's pretty amazing that they got away with what they're getting away with, and there's nothing American people can do about this. Because my brother's in the service, and I asked him, but he said, like, you're not allowed to sue. Like, they couldn't sue their employers. Like, you can't sue your employer.
That's,
so you said that falls back to that. But as an American citizen, is there something like I could do? Like, did I talk to your lawyer and see if you can do a class action lawsuit against Cheney and Bush?
Don't they have immunity? Joe Huffel, don't they have immunity? I mean, you can't
they do.
Sue.
You can't sue former officials for performing their, you know, the normal course of their duties.
Policies that they did. Yeah. So only if he was still in office could there something be done about it.
Well, and that would have to come at the ballot box. But I understand the frustration, Stephen. I really do.
I appreciate that call, Stephen.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in. You know, and only because we're still, we're kind of in the beginning or the midst of the throes of the scandal involving the Veterans Administration and these soldiers coming back from this war, many of them dealing with PTSD and really disfiguring injuries, and yet we still have we're having trouble getting that part of this war right.
I know, and you'd like to think the one thing we can do well is provide veterans benefits. And that's the one issue where there's bipartisan agreement in Washington, maybe the only issue in a dysfunctional Congress. Everybody wants to help the veterans. I do think that they're making corrections. It's hard to believe the VA got so off track, but bureaucracies will do that. They require a lot of attention from policymakers, and I think corrections are being made.
And also, it's also Vietnam veterans who are retiring. I mean, there are a lot of people that are now accessing the system as well.
Oh yeah, no question. And the kinds of injuries in Iraq with the roadside bombs. I mean, just debilitating injuries, losses of limbs, and stuff. These brave soldiers need a lot of support.
Let me see what looks like Iban from Northeast Philadelphia has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi, Dan.
The congressman mentioned the policy of preemptive war a couple times, and I'm wondering about his opinion, whether it's legitimate or not, given the fact that it was so disastrous, and it was also the policy of Nazi Germany in the invasion of Poland.
Well, I think that that's the one thing George Bush got right, that we may need to use a preemptive war policy in an age of terror, of faceless terrorists, rogue nations, weapons of mass destruction, that there may be in the future a time when we feel that North Korea is about to invade South Korea, or Iran's about to attack Israel, or someone's about to attack us, that a preemptive military use of force is necessary. But the next president that tries to say, well, trust me on that, is going to get laughed out of the halls of Congress because Bush so badly misplayed his hand. So the Iraq War is truly our only presumptive war in our national history. If we ever have to do it again, when Congress is called upon to authorize an invasion of another country or a major combat operation, they've got to insist on seeing the intelligence ahead of time.
We have an email from, looks like Barry John, more than 100,000 people died in the 10-year war. This is you, Joe. Do you ever think of the human cost when you voted to authorize the war? People would say you have blood on your hands.
Well,
I feel like you have blood on your hands.
4,500 American soldiers were killed in Iraq. 30,000 were wounded, and we're just talking about the needs of some of them. And probably 150,000 Iraqis died. Authorizing war is the most serious thing a member of Congress can do. I took that vote very, very seriously, which is why I'm so frustrated that I got it wrong.
I mean, he said blood on your hands. I mean,
I authorized war, and I authorized the use of America's awesome military power. I thought, to help defend the country. And it proved the basis for the war was wrong, and I take responsibility. I take accountability for that. I just want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. I mean, is it the kind of thing that keeps you up at night where, I mean, you are, I realize the book is sort of how you were able to not justify your vote, but explain it, perhaps.
Right. That's a big reason why I wrote this book. It's the most significant public action I ever took. No politician can do anything more significant than authorize war. And, you know, I voted for the invasion of Afghanistan right after 9/11 to get the Taliban. And at the time and now, I think that was the right vote. Although things have not worked out well in Afghanistan, but in October of 2002, it was the right thing for us to do, to get after the Taliban that had harbored terrorists. So one vote for war proved to be the right vote. The vote for Iraq proved to be the wrong vote. Both of them equally important and serious business.
Do you think, though, that the sort of distraction of the Iraq War, which was, you know, launched in March of 2003, distracted from the Afghanistan War? That became the kind of forgotten war at that time.
I do. I think President Bush lost focus totally, and the Taliban made a comeback in Afghanistan, and we're dealing with that now. In March of 2002, March 2nd, I believe, I took a ride on Air Force One from Philadelphia to Washington at the invitation of the president. He had spoken here in Philly for a charitable operation, and he offered rides back to members of Congress, which is kind of a custom that the president does. We had a discussion. Kurt Weldon was there, Rob Andrews, Bob Borsky. And we were talking about Afghanistan, and things were going badly there. We had routed the Taliban, but we were getting bogged down. And I said to him, well, maybe we need to turn to the UN, you know, for peacekeeping support. And he pounded the table in Air Force One and said, we are war makers, not peacemakers. We are war fighters. Yeah, we are war fighters, not peacemakers. And that kind of showed his attitude about all this. If there was a military answer to a problem around the world, he was willing to take it.
Let me get looks like Randy from Levittown to join us. Hi, Randy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh.
Hi, Randy, go ahead. You're on the air. Yep, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, yeah. I just want to say that, you know, everyone, it's been going on for years now, the constant negative thoughts about the war in general, and I realize that the Bush administration made some bad calls, to say the least, but, you know, we did depose a dictator, and I see it as sowing the seeds of democracy over there, which may not have flourished, you know, at all. And at least it gives it the chance to grow, just like, you know, it just no pain, no gain, I mean, basically. I mean, I feel bad for all the servicemen. I realize everyone's made mistakes, but, you know, there is some good that hopefully will come out of this in the long run.
Well, Randy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Do you agree with them that at least out of this, they, quote-unquote, got Saddam Hussein?
Well, there may be some good out of this, but our Iraq misadventure did far more harm than good, in my view. Yes, Hussein was a murderous tyrant, and the world's better off with him gone. But that doesn't justify. There are a lot of murderous tyrants around. We can't invade every country that's got a murderous dictator running it. I think we made a mistake in Iraq. Some good may come of it. They do have elections there now, but it's not working, and their government's totally dysfunctional. But we did much more harm than good.
Do you miss being in Congress at all? You were there for 6 years.
I was. I did not like the partisanship when I was there, the hyper-partisanship. It was frustrating. In fact, that's why I'd left what had become a safe House seat in 2004 and ran for the U.S. Senate, an election I lost to Arlen Specter. Since then, it's become even more dysfunctional and hyper-partisan. I don't think I would enjoy it at all today, except it's a wonderful privilege to serve in Congress. My goodness, to have a vote, to represent people. I mean, that was a professional high point for me. But the inability to get anything done is incredibly frustrating.
Do you understand people's frustration, suspicion of government? I mean, your book is really about how you and the public were lied to about the reasons for the Iraq war. And you can multiply that in a number of different ways and see why people are so frustrated. And then they don't even vote because they feel like, what is the difference between these two parties?
I totally understand it. I mean, when I was a young man, the Watergate debacle happened, and I felt that my government was lying to me. And the Iran-Contra happened, and the CIA abuses, and all this stuff. Vietnam was based on a lie in many respects. And then I got into the government and became part of the national government and voted for the Iraq War and came to the conclusion that my government was still lying to me. But I was part of the government then. So, lot of frustrations, and it's a wonder that that people are as patient as they are. You can understand why voters are frustrated and people aren't voting. We really need some straight talk in government.
Almost out of time here. I'm curious about your colleagues who were in Congress at the time. What's been their reaction to your book, or have you heard from members of Congress?
Well, I got some wonderful testimonial statements from a number of them, which was very, very gratifying. I think a lot of people who voted for it don't want to think about it. No other member of Congress has written a book like this. The ones that voted for it just want to forget about it. And the ones that voted against the war, I guess, are just frustrated and just don't want to spend the time reliving something that they thought was bad news. So there are lessons to be learned, though, Marty, and we got to learn them.
Joe Huffel, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
A great pleasure.
And the book is called The Iraq Lie, How the White House Sold the War. And again, the author is Joe Huffel. He was a congressman from Pennsylvania's 13th District from 2009 to 2005. He also served in the state legislature, and he was a Montgomery County commissioner. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can get information about how to download podcasts, Facebook, Twitter as well, and you can sign up for our weekly newsletter and more. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for those phone calls, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.